This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Robert Picardo, the emergency medical hologram from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Zachary Frueling, and with me, as always, is...
Suzanne Williamson.
Well, Suzanne, before we get started, I just have one question for you. To how many digits can you calculate pi?
After the decimal? I can only do two digits, so 3.14.
I don't think that's very fan mail worthy, Suzanne.
I'm sorry, math and I are not friends, and we never will be.
That's what you have me for.
There you go.
I can probably get at least five decimal places. I don't think I know pi any more than that.
What about apple pie? Do you know apple pie? I was taking it into actual pie.
Intimately.
You know, the tasty, edible kind.
Now I want pie. Thanks, Suzanne.
You're welcome.
Well, if you haven't already figured it out, we are going to talk about the Voyager episode Virtuoso today, in which the Doctor gets a lot of fan mail for his operatic performances, and people want to know how many digits of pi he can calculate in his fan mail.
They also want to know about his quantum relationships and the mathematics of romance. I'm reading from the screen cap that Seven had pulled up in Astrometrics of all the different subject lines in the fan mail.
I never looked at that. That's fascinating. Well, no, really, what kind of fan mail was there?
One subject line was the mathematics of romance.
The mathematics of romance. That makes sense given the Komar. Sure.
Another subject line was, I was just wondering. And then, of course, that mail is shown. It says, I was just wondering now, a being of such gifts as you, how you spend your free moments. Do you recalculate your personal goals, adjusting for age, physical condition, and desires the same way the rest of us do? Who are these people?
I do that all the time. I don't know about you.
These people are nuts. What is that all about?
Well, the Komar are an interesting race. I have a hard time finding them plausible. Like, they're so mathematical minded, but they've never encountered music before. Do you find that a plausible scenario?
Not at all plausible. There's no way that they've not encountered music. And they also didn't understand what art was. Like, you have to have some artistic expression. They didn't understand that.
Wait, I'm not sure I remember that from the episode. They don't understand artistic expression in general, not just music?
From the way I gathered it, they didn't understand artistic expression.
I don't know. Their fan mail is pretty artistic.
Their fan mail is nuts. They are true fanatics. They're stalkers, actually.
And they have just a little bit of a superiority complex.
Oh, just a little bit of one? They're out of control.
They even get an eye roll out of Captain Janeway.
Which is pretty hard to do sometimes. But yeah, she was rolling her eyes quite a bit this episode.
She's like, I know we're inferior and not as sophisticated as you, eye roll. But we'll humble ourselves and learn from your expertise.
Yeah, her eyes were about to roll out of her head halfway through the episode. Especially when she started rolling them at the Doctor then.
Diplomacy is not always easy.
No, it is not.
I think what I love about the Komar is the way that they just latch on to the Doctor as the epitome of music. Like, no one else on the ship, however musical they might be, holds a candle to the Doctor.
Oh, yeah. I loved when they were sort of rolling their eyes at Harry, Kim, and the Kim tones. It's like, we don't want to listen to this. We want the Doctor.
We want the Doctor. That's my Komari impersonation. We want the Doctor.
Yeah, that head dude was a little whiny.
And in true Doctor fashion, the Doctor didn't just give a musical performance, but he also turned it into a stand-up comedy routine, which was getting quite the chuckle out of the Komarians.
When did it become a stand-up comedy routine?
When he made the joke about the trigonometric, which I need to say slower.
I did that on purpose.
We did what? Just you wanted me to say trigonometric?
Yes.
Why?
To see if you would stumble over it as you did.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful. So you want me to complete the sentence?
This is
totally for your benefit.
This was for my giggles, yes. I do have a question about the Doctor and how far he took everything with the singing hologram. Do you think that's the 24th century equivalent to like a Funko Pop or a bobblehead?
You mean the little miniature singing hologram?
Yes. The one that he was handing out to everyone.
The souvenirs, the keepsakes, the...
Yes.
And I love the way the Doctor described this miniature hologram. He said something like, you can have one of these complimentary 8x10x4 miniature singing holograms.
So is that like the fun size Doctor? You know how candy bars come in like regular size and then fun size?
Yes, but at least a couple of the Komarians wanted the full size version.
Yes, yes, they did. They didn't want the fun size. They pretended to be sick. The full size version.
Well, I think the miniature holographic opera singing Doctor is a keepsake I can live without. Unlike the Komari Doctor fan club.
Well, that's why I was questioning. With it, it's the 24th century, like, Funko Pop for them. Do they tend to collect little holograms of other people?
Mathematicians, mainly, on Komar.
I could see that. Okay. And then that got me wondering about another thing that we really don't see very much in Star Trek. How is fame and celebrity dealt with? I mean, does that happen anymore? Are there movie stars since everybody can just do a holo novel and be a part of the action? Do they still have big budget movies?
I get the sense that two-dimensional movies are gone in the 24th century and it's all about holo novels. But there are still dramas that are acted out in holo novels, and presumably those are based on actors or templates, right?
Wouldn't you have like actors for the holo novels, or are you just making them all out of your imagination and building these holographic characters?
On Voyager, at least, a lot of the characters in the holodeck are just made up, right? Like when they invent Fairhaven, those aren't based on any real people. Those are just made up humans. I wonder how exactly that works. Like, how do you define human characteristics? There's an artistry to it. How exactly does that work when you're designing a holo novel? I don't really know. Like, do you hire like a three-dimensional graphic designer to design your three-dimensional human holograms?
You hire Reg Barkley.
You straight to the source.
Yes. Just go to Reg. He can help you out. He'll give you the hookup.
If you ever need holodeck advice, go to Reg. Absolutely.
But seriously, is there fame and celebrity in the 24th century? We've heard characters talking about people that are involved in sporting events and such things. Are there celebrities?
I can't imagine there wouldn't be. I mean, at least in some sense. Maybe not in a movie star sense. Maybe in a sports star sense. Maybe not. I don't really know what the sporting events of the 24th century are really like. But, you know, I think it's human nature to admire other people. And Captain Janeway says as much. Like, people want to learn more about people they admire. Captain Janeway's giving Seven a lesson in fandom. So I think there will be in some sort. I don't think we get enough information to really know, though. It wouldn't be movie stars. It might be holo novel stars, if that makes sense.
Musicians.
Yeah, there's still music being written in the 24th century. You know, jazz is apparently still a thing, so maybe there are some jazz music stars out there.
Oh, and why was Tom trying to push rock and roll on these people? If they're enjoying the Doctor's opera, do you really think they're going to love rock and roll?
Wait till you try Chuck Berry.
Trust me, your kids are going to love it.
Yes. This may be too much for you Kamarians right now, but trust me, your kids are going to love it. What is it about the Doctor in particular that makes the Kamarians latch on to him in particular? Like, there are other musicians on Voyager, so why the Doctor? Especially when they're so critical of the Doctor at the very beginning. They think he's just a talking puppet. They're trying to disable his vocal subroutines.
I think it's just because he surprised them with this thing that they've never heard or even thought of. That this inferior piece of technology could bring something new to their lives, new and exciting. It's like, why bother listening to Harry Kim and the Kim Tones when we have everything we need right here in the Doctor?
Well, it's interesting to me because they seem to develop some genuine affection for him, at least in the case of Tinku, for a while. Although that turns out to be a little bit of smoke and mirrors and the affection's not really there. She ultimately thinks of him as a, you know, essentially a talking puppet, a piece of machinery that she can reprogram or duplicate and reprogram. But they do seem to be genuinely moved by the Doctor, and they latch on to him. I just wonder how fleeting their fascination with the Doctor would have been had he decided to stay with them. You know, would he have been the music celebrity of the century for them, or would he have been yesterday's jingle after a week?
Definitely see them growing tired of him and creating their own things. They kind of remind me of the Pleasure Planet people.
Oh, yeah, very similar.
Something new and exciting, and then it's like, we've moved on.
That's a great analogy, Suzanne, because the Kamarians are very, very similar to the Sicarians, which are both really hard to remember and pronounce.
They even sound alike.
Yeah, the Kamarians and the Sicarians. Voyager might have been in a naming rut when it comes to naming new races at this point. But they're very similar because they both have a short attention span for novelty. It's all about the latest craze. Although, I think that's probably more so with the Sicarians. They're really explicit about it. We want new. We want pleasure. We want, you know, what's happening today. And the Kamarians, I think, are genuine in their appreciation for the Doctor at first. It fades pretty quickly, and they want to move on and make their own compositions, and they want to reprogram a duplicate of the Doctor. But I get the sense they're a bit more genuine about their enthusiasm than the Sicarians, at first at least. It has to be really flattering for the Doctor, though, because the Doctor feels genuinely underappreciated on Voyager. He's got talents that he feels other people don't appreciate. He feels constrained by, even though he's chief medical officer, he feels constrained by his role as chief medical officer on Voyager. He feels like people don't appreciate him. Doesn't fit in with the rest of the crew in some ways, right? He's a hologram. He's different from the rest of the crew. He feels like he's found a group of people that appreciate him for who he is, and he's willing to jump ship and go, literally jump ship, and go in search of people that appreciate him more.
But how much of the Doctor feeling not appreciated is just in his head?
Most of it, right? They really do appreciate the Doctor.
They do, just because the people on Voyager aren't fawning over him all the time doesn't mean he isn't appreciated.
This episode kind of hits at the notion of degrees of appreciation, right? Mm-hmm. There's this fame appreciation that appeals to the Doctor's vanity and does appeal to the, you know, part of the Doctor's self-identity. He does think of himself as a musician with a bunch of abilities, and that's part of how he views himself. And you know, the Kamarians are feeding that somehow. Mm-hmm. But there's this deeper sense of appreciation. The people that have known the Doctor for years at this point, 6 years, this is in the sixth season, so he's got friends that he's had for 6 years that really do care about him, really do see his strengths and weaknesses, and like him for his strengths and like him despite his weaknesses. And he's willing to kind of throw all that away for the sake of appealing to his vanity, essentially.
Yes, and the way that you could see the hurt on Seven's face as he's telling her that he's leaving, it was palpable that she was upset but not really showing it. It was just like in her eyes, just slight crinkling near, it was powerful.
That might be the most emotional we see Seven of Nine ever, actually.
No, because we see her cry when the Borg One dies.
Yes, okay, that's true. But I think this is deeper than that.
Well, yeah, because he's willing to just walk away from her friendship. And that's the first time that someone's done that. And gosh, that hurts.
Yeah. What does that say to Seven about how the Doctor thinks about her?
Yeah. I mean, that would make me question making a friend. But she does take him back pretty easily with her little fan letter once he's, you know, back on the ship in disgrace.
Okay. I know I said I don't cry over Voyager very much, but Seven's fan letter to the Doctor will get a tear out of me every time.
Is it the letter itself or the Doctor's reaction to it? How he it puffs him back up and he goes back to singing.
No, it's the letter itself.
Okay. It was a sweet letter.
It's such a sweet thing for Seven to do. Like, the doctor feels pretty low at this point. The doctor's offended a lot of his friends by being willing to walk away from their friendship. And Seven kind of throws him a lifeline, saying how wonderful he really is, even despite mm-hmm. those things. And it's really, really sweet for her not to hold a grudge in that way and to, you know, to find a way to simultaneously repair the damage, but also in the form of a fan letter, which the doctor does crave to some mm-hmm. degree.
And it shows an immense growth in her humanity.
For her to even be worried about it in the first place.
Exactly.
A year before this episode, she wouldn't have been worried about this.
Yeah.
This is just one of my favorite Dr. Seven moments in general. They have a lot of great moments together on screen, but this mm-hmm. shows how deep their friendship has really become and how meaningful it is to both of them. Because oftentimes the Dr. Seven relationship is a little one-sided. I think for Seven to show some affection backwards towards yeah. the doctor is kind of rare, although we know she thinks of him as a friend.
Yes.
When I think about the doctor being willing to leave Voyager, it's almost like he wants to run away and join the circus. I mean, that's not really a metaphor that really works anymore and probably definitely doesn't hold in the 24th century. You don't get a lot of traveling circuses that you can run away to join. But the idea of running away to join the circus, I think, is exactly what the doctor is doing here. Like, you know, he's dissatisfied with what's going on in his life, so he's going to jump on the train and go join the circus.
Well, at one point during the episode, he was wearing a clown outfit. So
that's my point. Exactly. Okay. I'm so glad you mentioned that because I didn't put two and two together. And that's exactly right. That might have been very, very intentional that, you know, he is essentially become a clown running off to join the circus or a traveling sideshow. He's the bearded doctor lady.
The bearded doctor lady. I always saw him as more of a trapeze artist, but yeah, I guess he could be the bearded doctor lady. Well, now I want to know who else would like join the circus, but in the freak show area, since you brought up the bearded doctor lady. Who could we get in this freak show for the circus?
From Voyager?
From Voyager, yes.
Who else would join the traveling circus but be part of the freak show? Vorik.
Vorik?
I don't know what he would do, but he would do something.
Okay, I could see Vorik.
Sure, I can't think of anyone else. Vorik would join. Vorik and the doctor running off to join the circus together.
This I would like to see.
Maybe Chell as well.
Oh, I don't know. I can't have Chell leave the ship. There's too many things for him to do there.
Too much laundry.
Laundry, you know, cleaning up after food fights in the mess hall. He's got too much to do.
Well, I'm fascinated in general by this idea of running away to join the circus, as we're calling it, because I wonder what that's like in the 24th century. If you decide you want a career change or you do feel limited by the track you're on inside your career path in Starfleet, what do? To do something different, to branch out? If you're chief medical officer, even as a hologram, mm-hmm. that kind of pigeonholes you. You're not going to become an engineer. You're not going to become the transporter chief, right? No. What do you do when you have that kind of existential crisis and decide you want a career change?
Command track, like Beverly Crusher. She was CMO, and she went on to captain her own ship.
I can't remember at this point, but had the doctor already become the emergency command hologram at this point?
Season 6, I think he has.
I think so, too. We could look it up, but I'm not going to take the time to do that. We don't do that. Listeners are like, why don't you guys look it up? We're like, because we're recording a podcast. Who has time for that? You expect me to know these things? Goodness. But really, why is this such a problem for the doctor? I guess this is what I'm trying to understand about the doctor psychologically. Yes, he craves a little fan mail and he likes the adoration and he's kind of vain in this regard. Uh-huh. But he can give concerts on Voyager. He can pursue music. Captain Janeway rightly points out that she's given him an incredible amount of freedom as a hologram to pursue his interests. He doesn't have his own quarters. He doesn't have a name. But other than that, he's essentially one of the crew at this point. Mm-hmm. He's no more pigeonholed in his job than Tom Paris is at the helm.
Essentially, I think he's just going through growing pains. I mean, if you think about it, think about when he came online. At this point, he's only 6 years old. I mean, yes, he doesn't act like a six-year-old, but...
So he's throwing a tantrum.
Not really a tantrum. Think of him as a teenager trying to figure out who I am. What do I want to do? Where do I want to be? Is this really what I want to be stuck doing?
kind of like the whale that spontaneously generates above the planet in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It has about 15 seconds to analyze its existence before it hits splat on the planet.
There you go.
What's my purpose here? Oh, what's that big thing heading towards me? Splat!
I just seriously see this as a type of growing pain for him.
Well, clearly, I mean, he's branching out. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. In a way, though, Suzanne, the doctor came fully functional. He is chief medical officer, capable of being chief medical officer on a starship in a pinch.
He didn't become fully functional until later when he added those subroutines.
Well, not fully functional.
But I digress. Yes, he was fully functional as a medical officer. He was not supposed to be the chief medical officer. He was only supposed to be a backup, a very useful and knowledgeable backup, but just a backup.
I guess there's just nothing holding the doctor back already. It's all in his head, right? He can do music and he can give performances mm-hmm. and he can pursue interests. And if he wanted to have a name, he could have one. If he asked for his own quarters, he did actually ask for his own quarters and Captain Janeway kind of laughs him off. But if he pushed the issue, he could probably get his own quarters. So there's nothing that he can't do. He just happens to have a day job and he feels dissatisfied by being pigeonholed in his day job. But it's not like that defines him, especially in season six.
Well, I don't know if he could get his own quarters. Seven can't even get her own quarters. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, but she needs to regenerate. You can't fit one of those alcoves in the quarters, right?
So yes, you could. She needs
the cargo bay.
They're not
You don't know how much
giant.
Machinery it takes to have an alcove.
Maybe They're there's a bunch of machinery. They're not that giant. We've seen them. You could fit that in quarters somewhere.
Instead of a sonic shower, there would be a...
The regeneration chamber.
An alcove. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
The sonic regeneration chamber.
Alcove.
Yeah. The sonic regeneration alcove. Got it.
Exactly. So, I mean, if anybody's getting their own quarters first, it's going to be Seven, and then maybe the doctor after that.
With some light modifications, yeah.
Yes.
Redecorating. Isn't that always the way you get a new quarters and you have to redo the bathroom anyway?
I usually start with the kitchen, but yes, the bathroom's always next after that.
Kitchen counters, bathrooms are next. Exactly. But why don't the other characters feel this dissatisfaction with their roles? Yes, we know Harry Kim would like to be promoted at some point, but Harry aside, everyone else seems pretty content with their job. Why does the doctor have this issue more than the others? I think it's all in his head. I think it's mainly vanity.
It is, especially with the fame, because he knows if he gave a concert on Voyager, maybe two people would show up, maybe three. One of those being Neelix, because it would be in the mess hall and Neelix is always there. So it's definitely about fame with him. He just wants the adulation. He wants people hanging on his every word, following him around.
Well, Suzanne, switching gears a little bit, what do you think about the relationship between Tinku and the Doctor, such as it is in the episode?
I did not see a relationship happening.
No, not seriously. The Doctor seems to have had something in mind, but...
Yeah, I mean, even just watching it, I didn't see her showing him an abundance of affection to even have him think that she was trying to start a relationship with him as he thought she was.
Well, she gives him this speech about the time they spent together being the whatever, you know, the best time of her life or whatever she had to say about it.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean, hey, let's hook up or hey, I want to be with you. It's just... Yeah,
and the doctor's
this was
mind
an exciting
did,
but... time in my life.
Well, she's pretty quick to replace him.
Oh, yeah, because she just sees him as a piece of technology, and that's it.
She wants the miniature version, is what you're saying.
No, that's why she created the full-size version, because she doesn't want the fun size. Nobody wants the fun size.
Seriously, though, that's essentially what the doctor is to her, though. Yes, he's the full-size version, but he's essentially a little piece of technology. Life-size piece of technology that she can program, just like the doctor programmed the miniature version of himself.
But that is how they treated him from the moment they met him, as a piece of technology, and he took it somewhere else just because they were interested in the music.
I actually read the episode a little bit differently than that. I kind of pictured the Kamarians as developing a very quick, accelerated affection for the doctor that very quickly faded. So there was a point at which they viewed him as more... But then very quickly it faded. Maybe I'm wrong about that. You think they viewed him as technology the entire time?
Yes. And the only thing that they appreciated and adored was the music.
Which wasn't enough to appreciate him as a person.
Exactly. Because they never saw him as a person. just like they'll never see that new hologram as a person. It's just technology. I have to wonder how Kes would have reacted to all of this had she still been around.
To the Doctor leaving?
To his fame and to his leaving, yes.
I don't think she would have been as bitter as Seven of Nine was. You know, she basically says, you just want fan mail to the Doctor. I don't see Kes being quite
You've
as bitter.
You've got mail.
But I can, yeah, not as verbal. Yes. Kes would be more like, you've got mail. And Seven of Nine is more like, you just want fan mail. I can picture Kes being upset about it. Mm-hmm. And even confronting the Doctor about it. But I don't picture her being as verbally acerbic, for lack of a better word, as Seven was to the Doctor about it.
Oh, well, no, because Kes is never acerbic to anyone. But I see it hurting her just a bit more, him wanting to leave.
Why more than Seven? Because, you know, clearly Seven depends on the Doctor's friendship and views him maybe as a type of father figure in a way.
I think it just would have been because he was there from the beginning. So after 6 years, he's just willing to walk away from everyone, including Kes. I think she'd be hurt by that.
But how do you think she would react? She'd be hurt, absolutely.
She'd be hurt.
But just like everyone else is on Voyager. But how would she
manifest? I definitely think she'd talk to him about it and not be like Captain Janeway is, you know, short with him. But just sit him down and seriously, do you really want to do this? Do you really want to leave your friends for this uncertainty? For these people that you just met? Just because they adore you at this moment. You have to question, is it you that they really adore?
The Doctor seems pretty willing to take an existential leap of faith here, right? That the Kamarians are really going to embrace him and continue to care about him and mm-hmm. be able to fix him when he breaks and that kind of thing.
Yeah, he was willing to give up all of his medical knowledge just to try and get extra space to create that vocal range. So he's willing to give up a gigantic part of himself just to stay with these people.
To sing that really awful composition.
Oh, yeah, there were no words. It was just, ew. It was bad.
What's funny, because the Doctor at first says, this is a lovely melody. And I listen to it going, no, it's not.
You lie. It is not lovely.
Well, if the quality of that composition is any commentary on Tin Ku's feelings for the Doctor, that doesn't say much.
It sounded more like a vocal exercise.
Yeah, one that jumps between keys and doesn't flow. And
it was not pleasing to the ear.
I did like the idea that the Doctor could be programmed to sing in harmony as opposed to just one voice at a time. That was an interesting idea in how they were going to reprogram his vocal subprocessor.
Wouldn't we all love to sing harmony with ourselves?
A duet of one.
There were some really good lines in this episode. And actually, one of my favorite quotes comes from this episode.
I knew you'd write down some quotes. I know you.
I just wrote down one, and it's my favorite.
What is it?
And it's from Janeway to Tuvok. After Tuvok says something about normal functions, Janeway looks at him and says, when have functions on this ship ever been normal? And truer words have never been spoken. I mean, just like weird is part of the job, this nails down Voyager. Nothing is ever normal on Voyager.
And I think that's what I love about Voyager in general. It's just such a weird show.
Yes.
They do some weird things compared to other Star Trek series.
Yes, because just about anything can happen.
What was that in reference to? Was that in reference to the Doctor's performance, or was that the social function?
That was people kept beaming on board the ship.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, we really need to stop these people coming on here. We need to get rid of the ones that are already here.
See, I guess I don't understand how it got so out of control. I mean, someone has to be in charge of allowing these people to beam on board in the first place. So when did they realize that they were beaming too many people on board? And why didn't they realize that beforehand?
Chell was in charge. He's like, sure, you want to come up? Come on.
Put Chell in charge of the transporter room. See what happens.
That was his first and last day in the transporter room.
I mean, there's only one way to get aboard the ship, and that's to beam aboard, mm-hmm. at least in this scenario. So why didn't they realize what was going on? It's such a weird problem. It's a self-created problem. It is. Someone had to authorize the Kamarians to come on board.
Yeah, I'm guessing it happened while Tuvok was asleep. And then he woke up to all these people, and he's like, really? This is what happens when I take a nap.
Oh, sure. Blame Harry in the night shift again.
He was just hoping that someone was coming up to hear him play his clarinet.
Put Harry in charge. Next thing you know, you've got 500 Kamarians on board.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why he never gets a promotion. B'Elanna was particularly snarky in this episode.
For good reason.
Well, yeah.
I mean, the doctor told her that she knows only a smattering of Klingon drinking songs.
Which is probably true.
Oh, come on.
I mean, we should all know a smattering of Klingon drinking songs.
But that can't be all that B'Elanna knows about music.
Well, no, because she's with Tom at this point, so she knows probably a lot of 20th century music because he likes to throw that in there whenever he gets a chance.
Do we know if B'Elanna is musical at all? Do we ever find out? I can't remember an instance where we talk about B'Elanna and music other than this episode.
Yeah, I don't think so.
What about Klingon opera? Does she even like Klingon opera? I don't think she does. I want to say there's a reference to her not really enjoying Klingon opera, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Well, she programs the doctor's son to listen to Klingon rock, but not opera.
Yes. She at least knows some Klingon rock and roll to be able to program that.
Yeah.
I love the idea of B'Elanna rocking out to Klingon rock and roll with Tom.
I don't see Tom rocking out to that.
Classic Klingon rock.
Classic. It would have to be classic Klingon rock from the 20th century.
So rock and roll, a la the 20th century, is quite a ways in the past by the time the 24th century rolls around. Do you think that Klingon classic rock would be equally as far back in the past? Are we talking like 400-year-old Klingon music?
Yeah, why not? Why wouldn't the Klingons have music from then?
And it would be rock and roll. That's what the doctor's fake family was listening to when B'Elanna programmed it.
I don't know if it was 20th century that he was listening to, but he was listening to Klingon rock.
Yeah. Who was the Klingon Chuck Berry?
I would rather know the Klingon Elvis Presley.
Kachuk Berry. You know, I'm actually having a hard time picturing a Klingon in an Elvis-style sequin jumpsuit.
I could totally see that. I could see Gowron rocking out in one of those Elvis jumpsuits. Why not?
Maybe that's how Gowron unwinds after a tough day in the council chambers.
You never know.
He goes home, puts on his jumpsuit, puts on some Klingon Elvis, re-energizes him for the next day.
Does he have any blue suede shoes?
Yeah, except the Klingon blue suede shoes are made of targ.
Targ suede shoes.
Targ suede shoes, yes. This is actually really interesting to me, being a musician myself, although I don't play music much anymore. The diversity of music here on Earth, as the Doctor rightly points out in this episode, is very great. There's many styles of music over many different time periods. We don't see that much musical diversity on screen with other races. We know about Klingon opera. Okay, I guess we know about a little bit of Klingon rock and roll, but we're not exposed to the diversity of music of other cultures like we are. And it's just because we're familiar with our own culture and our own musical history here, but presumably other races have that same degree of musical diversity in their cultures.
Oh, I would definitely think so. And what about the same race, but on different continents, like on Earth? I mean, we have our rock and roll, and then you go to different countries, say India, they have different styles of music there. China, Japan, everyone has their own different style. Don't you think the same would go for Klingons? Different continents, different countries.
I would love to hear some Klingon Caribbean music, yeah.
A little Klingon Billy Ocean.
You know there's a Klingon Yanni out there somewhere, too.
Just oh my gosh, that would be amazing. Crooning away. I loved Yanni. And that would totally fit with Klingon, you know, the flowing hair. And he had the mustache. I really want to see Klingon Yanni. That's amazing.
It actually is. We're kind of making fun of this, but it is really kind of interesting to think about what a Klingon interpretation of these different musical styles would be like. I find that fun.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome to know.
Because musical fusion is a thing, right? I mean, even Yanni is a kind of musical fusion. Mm-hmm. So you know there's got to be some epic 24th century transcultural, transplanetary musical mashups going on.
Is there a Klingon Weird Al? This I must know.
Well, according to Worf, Klingons do not laugh. But he's wrong.
Everybody needs a Weird Al. Everybody. Could you imagine a Vulcan Weird Al?
I can imagine the Doctor changing his matrix to look Klingon and pretending to be a Klingon Weird Al with his stand-up comedy routine.
On the next talent show night, yes.
Especially that with that photo of the Doctor with the poofy hair.
Yes.
That's Klingon Weird Al.
That is Klingon Weird Al. He just needs the glasses.
The Doctor has a pretty awesome responsibility, as he points out in the episode. He has to introduce music to an entire planet that has never experienced music before. And as I think about what I would do to do that, it's quite a responsibility. I think the Doctor does rightly feel the responsibility that he wants to introduce them to a diverse selection of music, which actually isn't very diverse at all when you listen to the music that's opera. In the episode.
It's opera.
And some American folk songs.
Yeah.
And some jazz.
Only because Harry was crashing and burning, and he had to save that.
He tried. I kind of like smooth jazz night in the mess hall, though. I mean, that sounds like a good way to spend a Saturday evening on Voyager to me. I wonder why we don't see more of Harry Kim and the Kim Tones, honestly. I thought that was a fun idea to have a little jazz band on Voyager. They could have picked up that idea and used that a lot more.
Do you really think people wanted Harry and the Kim Tones hanging out, like, at a party?
Why not?
Do you really want Harry at your party? You know he didn't get invited to the best parties. You know
that. Come on, that was some... Harry didn't get invited to the good parties. Harry Kim and the Kim Tones reminds me of this, like, late 80s, early 90s jazz movement that was out there. Like, I'm thinking of something like David Benoit or something that's ultra cookie-cutter kind of fluffy jazz. You know what I'm talking about, though, right? That kind of smooth... elevator music jazz from the 90s.
Yeah, it's definitely elevator music.
Yeah, Harry Kim and the Kim Tones is kind of elevator music.
Yeah, so do you really want them at your party?
Turbolift music, as they call it in the 24th century.
Nobody wants them around.
How come they don't play music in the turbolifts? Really?
Because they're not in them that long.
Just as long as an elevator ride.
No, they get from point A to point B pretty quickly. So it's like a super fast elevator.
No. In Voyager, we see people having long conversations in the turbolifts. We see a couple making out in the turbolift.
That's when they stop the turbolift. You know, they'll say, halt turbolift, and then they'll have a conversation. Because for some reason, they can't talk when the turbolift is going. I don't know why.
And poor Harry. He doesn't even get a chance to have a little miniature hologram of himself. He just didn't make it. Starving musician.
Would people really stand in line for a tiny Harry? I don't think so.
Yeah, while the Doctor's busy signing his miniature holograms, you know, Harry Kim's over there peddling discount CDs in the corner. Harry Kim and the Kim Tones, $1 today only. Only 2 replicator rations.
That's too expensive for me. Sorry.
That's how Harry Kim eats. He just has to save up his replicator rations, sell a few Harry and the Kim and the Kim Tone recordings.
So you're saying he's starving?
Yeah, he's not selling enough 24th century space CDs.
He's not selling any. Nobody wants that.
It's like self-publishing a book, right? You spend $5,000 to have your book printed and you don't come anywhere near making the money back. Was the Doctor actually signing anything? Or was he just literally like handing over a, here's your hologram, here's your hologram, here's your hologram?
I thought he autographed them, but I don't know how you would autograph a hologram.
Like maybe the flat little metallic base that the hologram popped out of? Is he putting his signature on that?
And does he sign the Doctor or just Doctor?
That's a very good question. It's too bad we can't zoom in and see that like you zoomed in and saw the text of the fan mail letters. I never thought to pause and actually try to read the letters. That's a great idea. I'm glad you thought to do that.
Well, as I was watching it, I was like, wait a minute. You can see words on the astrometric screen. I wonder what that says.
Those are the best of crudograms ever if those are actual letters. That's great. Well, Suzanne, I'm a little disappointed that you didn't feel like Harry Kim and the Kim Tones got the short end of the fame stick.
Does Harry deserve it? No.
Sure, they were a smooth jazz band. Sure.
Now, everybody else in the band was really good. It's just Harry. I mean, the drummer was really good.
I like seeing the futuristic drum sets that they have in Star Trek. We see one here, and we also see one in Star Trek Nemesis.
Oh, yeah.
With the futuristic translucent cymbals. Mm-hmm. So even though the Doctor did not actually succeed in exposing the Kamarians to as diverse of a set of music as he probably should have, given what we saw in the episode, even though it's, maybe they downloaded the database and gave them the musical database after all, we don't really find out whether that happened or not. But do you think music stuck for the Kamarians? Do you think they remain musical or is music itself a fad, just like the Doctor is a fad?
I could see them remaining musical, but it morphing into their own style. Much as we saw with Tin Koo's composition, it morphed into its own thing. So I see them going off with music and making it their own.
I wonder if it would serve the emotionally expressive role that it serves for most races, though, human or otherwise, in Star Trek, right? The Kamarians, it's very mathematical to them. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like it has an emotional connotation to them.
No, I don't see them attaching emotion onto music in any way, shape, or form. They are way too obsessed with math. I mean, like, super obsessed.
Yeah, so I wonder what the effect of that would be. You know, would their compositions would be mathematically creative, mm-hmm. but still a little harsh on the ears, maybe.
And no heart, no feeling.
Do you get the sense that Kamarians just have no heart and feeling? They're not Vulcans in that way, right? They're not.
No, because Vulcans have heart. They have feelings. The Kamarians, I don't know that they have it at all. So there's nothing even there to suppress for them.
It seemed like it was pretty easy for the Doctor to slide back into being chief medical officer again and repair the damage with his friends and just go on with life as it is. In true Voyager reset button fashion, the Doctor didn't have to live with the consequences of any of this. But maybe that's just a testament to all of their friendship, too. You know, they're willing mm-hmm. to accept the Doctor back, even when he was willing to walk away from them and go live with the Kamarians, such as it would have been.
Well, the only two people we saw him interact with after he came back were the Captain and Seven. So we don't know how Tom greeted him or Harry or anyone else.
Cold shoulder. Cold shoulder. It is a little bit interesting to think about what life on Voyager would be like with no Doctor there. Clearly, Tom mm-hmm. would have become the chief medical officer, as weird as that would have been.
That is so weird. Who's driving the ship?
They can find someone else to pilot the ship. I can't imagine no one else on Voyager has more medical training than Tom, but
I know.
I never really quite understood this, honestly, but doesn't everyone have some basic field medic training in Starfleet Academy?
You would think so.
It is weird to imagine Chief Medical Officer Tom Paris. What do you think that would have done to Tom?
Well, he was already going in to redecorate the doctor's office. I don't know. I think Tom needs constant supervision. So being on his own for most of the time would not be a good thing.
It's just quite a leap to go from being a lieutenant, then an ensign, then a lieutenant, to chief medical officer, right? Does he even have enough medical knowledge? Would he be able to do surgery, that kind of thing?
Oh, gosh, no. Would you trust Tom cutting you open? I wouldn't.
You know what Tom would do? Tom would make a new EMH, just like he and Harry were going to do that one time.
I was going to say they tried to do that once and then gave it up, and Harry threw Grey's Anatomy at him.
So I can picture Tom doing some late night studying. He's like, oh, if I'm going to be chief medical officer, I got to read this Grey's Anatomy. He would not do that. He would just go, let's make a new one.
Yeah, because he would be like, no, I need to watch my cartoons instead.
You know what he wouldn't do? He wouldn't give up the office. He would stay chief medical officer. He would make himself a holographic nurse. Yes, that's what he would do.
A nurse practitioner who could handle all of it.
Yes, exactly. I don't see Tom actually taking the time to become an actual chief medical officer with all the knowledge it would take. Not to slight Tom at all. It's not his skill set. It's not his interest. He would do what he had to do, but he wouldn't. I don't think he would become a chief medical officer. He would find another way.
Yes.
It does beg the question, who would drive the ship if Tom were now chief medical officer?
Why not Chell? It's always my question. Like, why not Zoidberg? Why not Chell?
Or that ensign that gives Harry a hard time when Harry's in command of the night shift.
But then there's no one to give Harry a hard time on the night shift.
Harry would have to simultaneously play captain and drive the ship himself. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, man, that would just be bad news.
Well, Suzanne, it's been fun talking about Virtuoso, but Chief Medical Officer Tom Paris isn't the only thing we've been discussing here on Trek FM. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere around the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
And good and bad things happen in life. And I just try to go back to that good old Star Trek optimism and think that at the end of the day, I get to determine what happens here. Like, even if the worst case scenario happens, I will still be okay at the end of it.
Earl Grey.
I haven't read them, but there is a series of Stargazer novels with him as the captain of the Stargazer. Is that what you were thinking of?
Picard?
Picard, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a whole series.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
You're thinking something else?
I thought you said Stargate.
I was like, it's a crossover. Like, why are we talking? Picard is in Stargate.
Yeah, Richard is crossing franchises over now. And then Babylon 5 comes in.
The 602 Club.
I think it comes down to what is motivating Bond this time around. So regardless of the trappings, regardless of the plot that we've set up, really for the first time, we've got Bond acting purely on his gut.
The Ready Room.
What was Star Trek in 1986? It was Federation, Klingons and Romulans, right? No Borg, no Cardassians, no Bajorans, all and everything else from the Next Generation forward, right? And you were lucky if you got an Andorian or a Tellarite sprinkled in there somewhere that pops up in the background of a movie.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most third-party podcast apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners-only group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Just choose message to a Trek.fm show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at Trek.fm and on Facebook at facebook.com/Trek.fm. Well, Zach, where can our listeners find you if they want to get into some smooth jazz conversation?
Well, if you'd like to talk about smooth jazz or any other 24th century musical form with me, you can always find me in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of Metatrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy.
Yay for Metatrek's being back! Woohoo!
Yeah, it's great to have Metatrek's back. It had been about 3 months since Mike and I had recorded an episode together, and now Metatrek's is back and we're doing weekly episodes again. And Suzanne, when you're not calling 24th Century Ticketmaster for your Klingon Yanni tickets, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me popping up every now and again in the Babel Conference. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8.
Well, if you haven't spent every last penny on Harry Kim and the Kim Tones recordings, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and many more, all available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of time and money to produce, host, and distribute these podcasts each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, we do have a few people we would like to thank, the first being C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, who, if you ask him really nicely, will give you a hologram of himself. Also, our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shamatella, our Patreon manager. Also, a big thank you to our associate producers, Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau.
Well, be sure to join us next time when Suzanne and I will be doing the opening act for Klingon Weird Al. But until then, this has been To the Journey. Ticketmaster even a thing anymore?
I don't know.
Did I just sound old?
No, they remember are still a thing. It's Ticketmaster.com.
But you remember going to buy tickets at a Ticketmaster location. Like you'd go to Blockbuster or you'd go to wherever they sold. Maybe it was
Hallmark. No, I always called.
Did you? See, I remember actually going to these venues that were Ticketmaster locations, but they were often associated with other stores. Like you'd go to a Hollywood Video and they'd sell Ticketmaster stuff there and you could buy your concert tickets there.
Yeah, I was always on the phone. Oh, it's busy. Hang up, redial. Hang up, redial.
I would go retro and I'd buy my Klingon Yanni tickets in person.
You would have to camp out for the Klingon Yanni tickets. You know that, right?
Of course. It would be a sold-out concert otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Give me some Klingon Yanni and some smooth jazz from Harry Kim and the Kim Tones. Oh, goodness. Okay.